They'd followed their subject to yet another expensive restaurant, where he dined alone. Suvorov Konyev was driving back toward his flat at 7:15. The car slowed as it passed one corner, then changed direction. "Shit, he's going to the park," the senior FSS guy said. "He must have spotted a flag somewhere." Suvorov Konyev parked his car on one side of the park and walked across the darkened grass. That's it. He picked it up. "He's on the computer," an electronic specialist said at FSS headquarters. He read the keystrokes off the keyboard bug they'd planted. "There's the clear text. He's got the message." He logged onto his email service and started typing up messages. They all said, "Contact me as soon as you can." A total of 4 letters had gone out. "Now, let's see if we can identify his correspondent, shall we?" the senior investigator told his staff. That took all of 20 minutes. What had been routine drudgery was now as exciting as watching the World Cup football finals. Suvorov left the apartment building at 9:15 and drove his car into the city. They met at a magazine kiosk and walked together toward a coffee shop. For Pavel Georgievich Efremov, the question was what to do now. Arrest them all and risk blowing the case, or merely continue to shadow, and perhaps accomplish the mission. The question would be answered by one of the 4 contacts. He was the oldest of them, about 40. His name was Igor Maximov. He held up his hand, rubbing forefinger and thumb, and getting the answer to his question, he shook his head and politely took his leave while the others continued talking. Efremov ordered him picked up. Docile as a lamb, he accompanied the 2 FSS officers to their headquarters. Efremov told him, "You met with your friend Suvorov to discuss participation in a crime. We want to hear what was discussed." "Comrade Efremov, I met some old friends for coffee." "Yes, of course. Tell me, do you know 2 former Spetsnaz men like yourself, Amalric and Zimyanin?"
"I've heard the names, but I don't know the faces."
"Here are the faces." Efremov handed over the photos from the Leningrad militia. "They are not pleasant to look upon."
"What happened to them?"
"They did the job for your comrade Suvorov, but he was evidently displeased, and so they went swimming."
"What do you offer me?"
"I offer you your freedom in return for your cooperation. You left the meeting before any conclusions were reached."
"He asked me and the others to participate in a murder.
He offers 20,000 euros each. I decided that my time is more valuable than that." "Do you know the name of the target?"
"No, he did not say."
"That is good. You see, the target is President Grushevoy."
Maximov's eyes flared. "That is state treason," the former Spetsnaz sergeant breathed, hoping to convey the idea that he'd never do such a thing.
"You were wise to cooperate, Igor Ilyich." Efremov lifted his phone. "Arrest them all," he told the field commander. "The meeting broke up. We have all of them under surveillance. Suvorov is en route back to his flat with 1 of the 3. Well, assemble the team and arrest them both."
"Feeling better?" Colonel Aliyev asked.
"What time is it?"
15:40, Comrade General. You slept for 13 hours.
Here are some dispatches from Moscow.
"You let me sleep that long?" the general demanded, instantly angry.
"The war has not begun. Our preparations, such as they are progressing. We have support now from an American Elint aircraft, but they tell us that the Chinese aren't using their radios, which is not a surprise."
"God damn it, Andrei!"
"So court-martial me after you've had your coffee. I got some sleep, too."
"You have a staff?"
"I have a staff, and I decided to let them do their jobs while we slept."
"What of the Dnieper depot?"
"We have a total of 180 tanks operating with full crews. The reservists seem to be functioning with some degree of enthusiasm."
Aliyev walked over a mug of coffee. "Drink, Gennady Yosifovich. If we live, I will see you promoted, Colonel."
"I've always wanted to be a general officer."
"What of the border troops?"
"I have transport assigned to each post. I've sent some of the reservists in BTRs to make sure they have a little protection against the artillery fire when they pull out. The border troops have ample protection, and the orders have gone out so that they will not need permission to leave their posts when the situation becomes untenable."
"So?" Ryan asked.
"We can move first armored into Russia,
Say it's a joint training exercise with our new NATO allies, Robbie said. That could buy us a few days.
Then do it, the president ordered.
Yes, sir.
General Moore moved to make the call.
Gigansk, on the west side of the Lena River, had once been a major regional air defense center for the old Russian Air Defense Command. It had been largely abandoned, with just a caretaker staff to maintain the facility in case it might be needed someday. This turned out to be a piece of lucky foresight because the United States Air Force started moving in. The first of 30 C-5 Galaxy transports landed that morning, taxiing to the capacious ramps to offload their cargo. The first things wheeled off were the Dark Star UAVs. They looked like loaves of French bread copulating atop slender wings and were long-endurance, stealthy reconnaissance drones. Fighter and attack aircraft came into Suntar, far closer to the Chinese border, with tankers and other support aircraft, including the American E-3 Sentry AWACS birds just west of there at Mirny. The arriving Americans found their Russian counterparts, and immediately the various staffs started working together. The quarter horse went first. Under the watchful eyes of Lieutenant Colonel Angelo Giusti, the M1A2 main battle tanks and M3 Bradley cavalry scout vehicles rolled onto the flat cars of Deutsche Rail. The eyes of 1st Tanks, the division's helicopter brigade, was sitting at its own base, awaiting the availability of Air Force transports to ferry them east. Some genius had decided against having the aircraft fly themselves.